Will you unmute? Dylan's going to start with the set-aside prayer, and then we are going to do a meditation.
God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about my physical craving after I start to drink.
Thank you.
How was that, you guys?
It was mostly good. There's like a few choppy moments, but mostly good.
Okay, I'll get Rachel to get it together and she can do it. Was it better, Dylan? Okay, Joe.
Ready? Okay. Yeah, it was a little better. It kind of sounded like drinking.
Like drinking?
Sound like a drunk, yeah. Like a drunk playing music. okay. It sounded like vodka. Okay. So just an announcement I wanted to bring up. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday night Big Book Awakening study. And my name is Joe and I'm an alcoholic. So when you're meeting with your partners, I was talking about this with Tyler tonight and wanted to remind the group, a good practice to do is to take the questionnaire questions and put them in your big book. So when you're working with someone, you could put the questions at the bottom of the page so you know where the questions are. So as you're going and reading the chapter, you can be going over the questions with them. It's helpful to mark the questions in your book so you can hit them as you're going through the chapter. We are on Bill's story tonight, and I wanted to go over a little bit of a recap of the doctor's opinion before we get into Bill's story, to just cover what we did last week. Each time I like to do just a slight recap to get centered in the work, where we're at and what we've done so far. So last week we went over the doctor's opinion, and what we're starting to look at here is the physical part of my disease, my physical powerlessness, right? And Dr. Silkworth talks to me about this alcoholic torture and that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as my mind. So he drew a line between the body and the mind and had me start looking at, you know, what's wrong with me physically? That, yes, I had mental problems, mental issues, but what was going on in my body? And he relates it to an allergy. And like Tyler mentioned last week, an allergy in the 1930s is a little bit different than the allergy today. Like an allergy would be incurable. It affected me, it affected people like it doesn't affect others, and it's life-threatening. So when I look at those three things, was my alcohol and drugs life-threatening? Did it seem incurable? And did it affect me like it didn't affect other people? And I could totally see that when it comes to my drinking and drugging and my loss of control. And he uses allergy related to like strawberries. When I break out if I have an allergic reaction to strawberries, I break out in a rash. My allergic reaction to alcohol, I break out in a craving for more, right? And I start to get in touch with what's going on with me physically. This physical powerless point that we're looking at. We're looking at two points of control through the first step, the first half of the first step. I'm looking at, am I powerless physically? Can I control the amount once I start? And then the other point would be, am I powerless mentally? Can I control the stop? Okay. So this physical aspect that we're looking at explains a lot of the things that happened to me in my story of why I couldn't stop. That when I put drugs or alcohol in my system, there was a craving for more that was beyond anything I could think through. It was beyond anything, and it got me into a lot of trouble and had a lot of consequences in my life, okay? I couldn't get to the funeral. I couldn't get to the job. I couldn't show up for the relationship. I couldn't show up for anything. I had made many promises. I'll be there. I'll be here. I'm going. I'll be there for you, and I never got there, you know? I never showed up. I couldn't show up for life, and there's a lot of shame and guilt associated with that, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. And so here, someone's explaining to me that there's something going on in my body when I pick up a drink or a drug. And when we talk about the craving, see, I would hear the word craving in meetings a lot, and I thought it was just me wanting to drink or use, that I was craving it. But no, the craving is once I put it in my system, okay? I have drugs or alcohol in my system, and there's a craving for more, the phenomenon of craving. The doctor goes on to talk about these allergic types can never safely use alcohol or drugs in any form. And I identify with that I can't use it. It's not safe for me. You know, it's not safe, you know, in any form, pot being a form of alcohol, meth being a form of alcohol, GHB, ketamine, you name it, any of the lines of the drugs or different alcohols is a form for me. And it's not safe for me to put anything like that in my body because of what happens, because I have an allergic reaction to all that stuff. The doctor mentions why we drink. We had a good discussion on that last week. About the effect, you know? And as Tyler was mentioning, we want to look at that in our last 3 years or our last moments drinking and using and not in the beginning. Because what we're seeing in the beginning is the excuses I use of why I drink and use, they're not proportionate to what happened. You know, it's not proportionate. There's a lack of proportion to think straight. The reason why I pick up, the reason why I tell myself, because I'm lonely, because of this, I'm nervous. I just need to act better, or I need to feel comfortable. These things that I told myself of why I start to drink or why I start to use, it doesn't, the consequences overpower that, you know, and it's a lie. The real reason is because I'm an addict and an alcoholic, you know, and it was just about the drinking and the drugging. It wasn't about the feelings. It wasn't about all these little excuses that I made up. And as a newcomer coming into the rooms, and when we're talking to them about that, you know, I'm not glorifying the excuses. You know, we're talking about the problems that it caused, and looking at how any number of excuses, the result of that, it didn't match, you know. The consequences never match the reason. I say I'm gonna go drinking because I'm lonely, and the reaction of alcohol affects me. I do all this drama and the chaos in my life, and I end up lonely anyway. You know, I push everyone away from me in my life. So how's it working for you? You know, how's that alcohol working for you? And the doctor suggests that I'm not drinking to escape. I'm drinking to overcome a craving beyond my mental control. And I see that in my story, that it wasn't about the excuse. It was about drinking and drugging to overcome a craving for more. And that I can't do anything about that. See, I can't think my way out of an allergy. I can't think my way out of the problems that are going on in my life as a result of my drinking and using. I knew that when I drank and used, there was problems and then I lost control, but I didn't know that every time I drank and used, I was gonna lose control. Until I go through this and it starts explaining to me and I start seeing it in my life and I start to see that that's what's wrong with me. I think I shared before that the most freedom I felt was through the first step. And if you're experiencing the first step right now, like I am, it's not a pleasurable experience. You know, this is a spiritual experience of the painful variety. And then I'm going through the first step again, no matter how much time I have, I'm going to start experiencing that as I go through my story. And I start experiencing a level of powerlessness inside again. And I'm going through my story and I started getting restless. I started getting irritable, discontent, a little uneasy. I start thinking about the things that have the shame and the guilt and the feelings come back about what I was doing at the end of my drinking and my drugging. And that's present with me, you know. But the freedom I experienced through the first step, I found the most freedom in step one because I never knew what was wrong with me. Here the doctor's laying it out for me. You know, this doctor's laying it out. And I get this stuff from the doctor's opinion. I get these ideas about this physical allergy. And then I'm able to go into Bill's story and lay my experience aside with Bill's. You know, later we're going to do that again. And there's a solution and more about alcoholism. I'm going to have these four stories that I get to lay my experience aside as well. The big book's going to give me a lot of information to process. And I start aligning that. I turn statements into questions to find out, is this my truth? Is this what's really wrong with me? And then I get to this place of now it explains it, you know, having a problem that a doctor can't explain to me is a very scary place to be. If I know something's wrong with me and I keep going to the doctor and I keep going to the doctor and they can't tell me what's wrong with me, that is a very dangerous and scary place for me to be in. And I feel like that's where I lived with my alcoholism for a long time. And I couldn't even get an answer from people in the rooms because I don't even know if they knew what was wrong with them. They sure as hell didn't know what was wrong with me. And what I was hearing, they didn't know much of anything. But I might not have been ready to understand that. You know, I think that we're all graced in a place and I have to be in a place to receive. And I don't know if I was there. And I'll get to that in a little bit. So Tyler talked about the types that the doctor talks about. And one of the types is that I identify with most is hopeless. The hopeless type, the one who wants to quit but can't, you know. And going into Bill's story and looking at Bill, and I'm going through Bill's story to answer the question, was I as hopeless as Bill, right? Because on page 17, it's going to ask me. It's going to tell me thousands of men and women felt just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. And there's my hope, right? But I have to answer that question. And this hopeless type, you know, I went, and Bill talks about in his story, and I'll get into that again. I was hopeless. I deemed myself hopeless long ago. And I couldn't stay sober. You know, I knew I was a hopeless case. I knew nothing could fix me. I knew treatment centers couldn't fix me, sponsors couldn't fix me. And I couldn't stop drinking and using. And I lived in that place, and it's different for all of us. And some people can get sober and get into this place where they're not doing the program, but they're staying sober, and it's grace, you know? And I don't know, it's different for every person. Some people get there faster. Some people don't have to experience relapse, you know? And that's just all, we have different stories. But I lived in this place of hopelessness, not knowing my problem, but not being able to fix it. And I don't know if it was around me, because I was still going to meetings. I was going to meetings. I had a sponsor. I was living with sponsors. I was using that sponsor's places. I watched my sponsee brothers get well, and I was getting worse. And that's just what happened to me, you know? I wasn't in a place to receive. And going through Bill's story, looking at Bill's story, I'm identifying with his hopelessness. You see, I'm going to take Bill's name off of there and put Joe, and put Joe's story. And that's what I do. This is my story. And I'm going to go through the next 8 pages, turning statements into questions to look at, and look at Bill's story to see if I was as hopeless as Bill. And Bill's story is in two parts. There's his drinking and then his recovery. And I'm going through this story, and I'm looking at it as what the preface said. It says, did I feel like that? Did that happen to me? And am I really willing to accept this program? You know, and going through Bill's story to find my hopelessness, then I could look at, well, what am I really willing to do what Bill did? And is there any reservations there? Because just because we go through this and see this does not mean that we're not going to resist. I might still be resisting the program, and why? What is that about? You know, I may go through this and see my hopelessness and still not be able to accept what the program has to offer. Bill had struggled too. He struggled with God. He struggled with the ability to, that he couldn't control the situation. And is that true for me too? You know, so I could still be in this hopeless state and still be resisting upon this program and what it all has to offer me. And I'm going to go through this, and I can use that as a barometer as I'm going through this and looking at Bill's story. I look at his drinking, and I identify with it. Identify with the doctor's opinion, and then I can look at next week when we go over to Bill's solution. Am I willing to do what Bill did to get this? You know, am I really willing to go for what this book has to offer? Am I here to scoff, or am I sold on this, and am I willing to go for it? Right. So we go through Bill's story in that way, and I take that into the meetings, and I take that into my life of, did that happen to me? Have I felt like that? You know, the way Bill thinks, the way he drinks, and the way he feels. And I go through this to find my story. And so let's turn to Bill's story on page 1. And I'm going to start reading. I'm going to try and read everything, but we'll see. I might skip a little bit because it's long. All right, so war fever ran high in the New England town to which we knew young officers from Plattsburgh were assigned, and we were flattered when the first citizens took up their homes, making us feel heroic. Here was love, applause, war, moments sublime with intervals hilarious. I was a part of life at last, and in the midst of the excitement, I discovered liquor. I forgot the strong warnings and the prejudices of my people concerning drink. In time, we sailed for over there. I was very lonely and again turned to alcohol. So I want to point out something here. In two completely different mindsets, Bill's turning to alcohol. He's turning to alcohol in excitement, and he's turning to alcohol behind loneliness. And I look at, even in the questions, it says, did you drink when you were lonely? Did you drink when you were not lonely? Is it really about my feelings? You know, it's not really about my feelings. I could drink on the whole gamut. You know, so to come into the program and think, and then the ego tells me what the day is going to look like, that I'm going to go out again because it's going to be a bad day, a sad day. This is going to happen. This drama is going to happen in my life because now I'm controlling my sobriety. I'm controlling my not drinking. I'm controlling my powerlessness. You know what I mean? I think I have power over that. And I know what the day is going to look like when I drink. And then I'm sitting in sobriety being this person who's not drinking, but managing my own life. And now I've become the higher power in my life because I know what it's gonna look like when I drink behind those feelings that I think I drink over. But I drink when it was good and I drink when it was bad. So who's to say when I'm gonna drink? And drinking is always an option. I mean, it's always on the table. I know I hear people say, you know, oh, it's not an option, it's not an option. Well, insanity is an option. And when I get into a place of insanity, I might pick up again. It depends on my life and where I'm going. Am I growing spiritual or am I worshiping self now? You know? Anyway, let me continue. We landed in England. I visited Winchester Cathedral. Much moved, I wandered outside. My attention was caught by a dog roll on an old tombstone. Here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking cold small beer. A good soldier is never forgot, whether he dieth by musket or by pot. Ominous warning, which I failed to heed. And I had many ominous warnings in my life. And if someone had told me early on all the bad stuff that was going to happen behind drugs and alcohol, I wouldn't have believed them. I mean, hell, I was in the DARE program as a kid. I knew what the hell they were talking about. And this is irony. This, talk about an ominous warning, okay? I was in the DARE program, and part of the DARE program, we had to go to an AA meeting. And I remember sitting in the AA meeting in town, and I was with two other girls in my class because we had to study. We had to ask permission, and they let us in. And I remember sitting there and going, God, these people, I've never heard so many victims crying about stuff. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, this is pathetic. These people are pathetic. And then, you know, fast forward, here I am in a meeting crying about my problems. But ominous warning, which I felt the heat, oh my God. That didn't get more ominous than that. The way I drank, the way I blacked out when I drank, the way I used drugs, the consequences I experienced, these were all warnings that I had early on, which I didn't heed. At 22 and a veteran of foreign wars, I went home at last. I fancied myself a leader, for had not men of my battery given me a special token of appreciation, my talent for leadership, I imagine, would place me at the head of vast enterprises, which I would manage with the utmost assurance. So I took a night law course and obtained employment as investigator for a surety company. The drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. I felt like that. My work took, and drugs helped me with that even more. My work took me about Wall Street, and little by little, I became interested in the market. Many people lost money, but some became very rich. Why not I? I studied economics and business as well as law. Potential alcoholic that I was, I nearly failed my law course. At one of my finals, I was too drunk to think or write. Though my drinking was not yet continuous, it disturbed my wife. We had long talks when I would steal her forebodings by telling her that men of genius conceived their best projects when drunk, that the most majestic construction of philosophic thought were so derived. So he mentions that his drinking here was not yet continuous. So Bill, looking back on his story, is able to identify that he's not a continuous drinker yet. So maybe he's not experiencing the physical craving as of yet, okay? But by the time I had completed the course, I knew the law was not for me. The inviting maelstrom of Wall Street had me in its grip. Business and financial leaders were my heroes. Out of this alloy and drink and speculation, I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. Living modestly, my wife and I saved $1,000. It went into certain securities, then cheap and rather unpopular. I rightly imagined that they would someday have a great rise. I failed to persuade my broker friends to send me out looking over factories and managements, but my wife and I decided to go anyway. I had developed a theory that most people lost monies in stocks through ignorance of markets. I discovered many more reasons later on. We gave up our positions and off we rode on a motorcycle, the sidecar stuffed with tent, blankets, and change of clothes, and three huge volumes of financial reference service. Our friends thought a lunacy commission should be appointed. Perhaps they were right. I had had some success at speculation, so we had a little money. But we once worked on a farm for a month to avoid drawing on our small capital. That was the last honest manual on my part for many a day. We covered the whole Eastern United States in a year. At the end of it, my reports to Wall Street procured me a position there and the use of a large expense account. The exercise of an option brought in more money, leaving us with a profit of several thousand dollars for that year. For the next few years, fortune threw money and applause my way. I had arrived. My judgment and ideas were followed by many to the tune of paper millions. The great boom of the late 20s was seeding and dwelling and swelling. Drink was taking an important and exhilarating part in my life. There was loud talk in jazz places uptown. Everyone spent in thousands and chattered in millions. Scoffers could scoff and be damned. I made a host of fair weather friends. So here in this paragraph, it says drinking was taking an exhilarating part in my life. I find that true for me too, like the empowerment of drinking. So here it's like, when I first started drinking and drugging, It was very empowering to me. This is when alcohol and drugs worked, okay? When it worked for me, which wasn't very long. I mean, the delusion that it was still working lasted longer than the actual working of alcohol and drugs, if that makes sense. But I mean, I would go partying, I was clubbing, I was doing, I was alive at last. You know, it helped me come out because I was gay, I wasn't out yet. It helped me be the person that I thought I needed to be, or it helped me be who I was, you know? And behind that, I felt like I already needed it. I was already dependent upon alcohol and drugs. My life was exhilarating. I needed it for this exhilaration in my life. You know, it was the most important thing in my life out the gate, you know. The next paragraph, he says, my drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. So on the page before, it was not yet continuous. Then it goes to be an exhilarating and an important part of life. And now it's already assuming more serious proportions and continuing all day and almost every night. So here I'm starting to see, and I look at my story, now I'm starting to see how it's lasting longer. It wasn't just doing a little bit here and going to the club. Now I'm doing a little bit here, going to the club, going to after hours, doing it all night, waking up in the morning. It says, did you drink and drug in the morning? Well, if I had some left, yes, I was doing it in the morning. Of course I was. I was pulling an all-nighter. It was like, you know, what morning is it? I don't even know. It could be a week later, you know, but it wasn't like that at first. You know, it wasn't like that at first. So it wasn't continuous, and we're all different here. So some people out of the gate, they're like, oh yeah, I drank and used from the beginning and I never stopped. And some people are growing it more slowly. I remember my first time drinking tequila, I blacked out, which doesn't mean I'm an alcoholic, but I lost control. Then after that, I was drinking fine. I was controlling it. I was doing whatever. And then later on, again, I started losing control. You know, with drugs, it was the same thing. A little baggie can last me a week. You know, and then it started getting, well, I need a few more of these baggies to last me a week. You know, it started getting continuous. It started getting all day and all night, you know, and the fun started getting a little less for me. Here's where I started experiencing some consequences of my drinking and using, especially when it was losing control physically. All right. I'm going to keep reading. There were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. There had been no real infidelity. He's lying out of his ass right here. For loyalty to my wife, helped at times by extreme drunkenness, kept me out of those scrapes. If your wife is going to read a book that you're publishing, you probably shouldn't talk about cheating on her, just so everyone knows. Okay. I'll just say that. In 1929, I contracted Gulf fever. We went at once to the country, my wife to applaud while I started to overtake Walter Hagen. So, and then here I look at in my life, and what I relate to is these ideas of what was going to fix me. So, okay, I'm drinking and drugging too much. Now I better start exercising. I'm going to run marathons, you know, I'm going to start running, and then I'm smoking meth and then running when I'm sober, you know? it's like, what? school, I'm going to go back to school. You know, school's going to fix me. And then I can't make it because I drop out because I'm loaded, you know, or oh, I'll just get in this relationship. And then it's a tweaker relationship and it's all fucked up anyway, you know? But that's, he did golf, you know, I never liked golf, but if I did, maybe I would have been good at it. I began to be jittery in the morning. Golf permitted drinking every day and every night. It was fun to carry him around the exclusive course, which had inspired such awe in me as a lad. I acquired the impeccable coat of tan one sees upon the well-to-do. The local banker watched me roll fat checks in and out of his till with amused skepticism. And here I relate to being like a piece of shit dipped in gold. Like on the outside, I might have pulled it together enough, you know, but inside I'm dying and I'm drinking and I'm using constantly. This is just how I relate to this. I'm not going to read the stock exchange part. I'm going to move down a little bit. It says, next morning, I'm just skipped a paragraph. Next morning, I telephoned a friend in Montreal. He had plenty of money left and thought I'd better go to Canada. By the following spring, we were living in our accustomed style. I felt like Napoleon returning from Elba. No St. Helena for me. So I know you guys probably have the notes too, but Napoleon was... 1804 to 1814, he was exiled in the Italian island Elba. He escaped and then was imprisoned later. Okay. So he escaped exile and then got in prison. And so like how Bill's relating to this is like, oh, I'm going to do it. I'm going to control it this time. And then, oh, got, I lost control again. And that was me every time, you know, there was these moments of, I got it now, you know, I just got the right combination or I got the right amount and I'll be good. And then I see the problems going on because I lose control again. He says, but drinking caught up with me again and my generous friend had to let me go. This time we stayed broke. We went to live with my wife's parents. I found a job, then lost it as a result of a brawl with a taxi driver. Mercifully, no one could guess that I was to have no real employment for 5 years or hardly draw a sober breath. I don't know what you guys did, but I just couldn't shoot meth and work at the same time. And meth just won. And I didn't work. I didn't work for years. It wasn't like you shoot meth socially, you know, it just doesn't happen that way. I didn't work. I had a boyfriend and I lived with him and I mooched off of him. I mooched off of family. I stole from people. I stole from him. He was sober and I was, I just remembered this. He would go to meetings and come home and have the seventh tradition in the top drawer. And I would go into the seventh tradition and steal money from it and go get high. And this was my life, you know, because I wasn't working. And this is what I had to do to get by. Of course, I made amends later, but I didn't draw a sober breath and I didn't work at all. This is the first time I actually heard someone, you know, I've read Bill's story 100 times in treatment. I opened this book 100 times and I read Bill's story and I was like, that's a cute story. And then when I did it the BBA way and I was turning statements into questions and they told me to look at my story and write my name in there and write Joe's story and write my story in the margin. I'm reading this and this guy is talking to me like, I didn't meet people like this, you know, they might have been in treatment, but this guy didn't work. He didn't have a job or draw a sober breath for 5 years. And I'm like, that's me, you know, and I'm the farthest. I mean, I feel like I'm the farthest from Bill. I wasn't born anywhere near there. I'm gay. You know, I was never married. I never went to war. But I can relate to this. I can relate to the story. I can relate to the way he drank, the way he thought, and the way he felt. And that's how I'm going through this. It says, my wife began to work at a department store, coming home exhausted to find me drunk. I became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. Liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. Bathtub gin, 2 bottles a day, and often 3 got to be routine. Sometimes a small deal would net a few $100s, and I would pay my bills at the bars and delicatessens. This went on endlessly, and I began to waken very early in the morning, shaking violently. A tumbler full of gin, followed by 6 bottles of beer, would be required if I were to eat any breakfast. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation, and there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope, which renewed my hope, you know. Treatment would renew my hope. A new sponsor would renew my hope. I'm going to a different meeting. I'm starting to get a little bit more hope now. Got to the point where nothing worked, and it stopped being renewed, you know. I couldn't renew it anymore. but treatment, I went to like 6 or 7 different treatments, you know, and 9 different treatments and 4 sober livings I went to. And each time going in there, you know, I'm going to really do it this time. And I thought I could muster up all the self-will that I could do, you know, and it wasn't about self-will at all. It wasn't about willpower at all. There was nothing I could do. I could leave treatment and get loaded. I could leave the meeting and get loaded. I lived with sponsors, like I said, and got loaded. It didn't matter, you know. I went to relapse prevention therapy and got loaded. but there was still this part of me that was still trying to control the situation. I was still trying to control my life, you know. Gradually, things got worse. The house was taken over by a mortgage holder. My mother-in-law died. My wife and father-in-law became ill. Then I got a promising business opportunity. Stocks were at a low point in 1932, and I had somehow formed a group to buy. I was to share generously in the profits. Then I went on a prodigious bender, and the chance vanished. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw that I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business. And so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply did not know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time I was beaten on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. The remorse, horror, and hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. The courage to do battle was not there. My brain raced uncontrollably, and there was a terrible sense of impending calamity. I hardly dared cross the street lest I collapse and be run down by an early morning truck, for it was scarcely daylight. An all-night place supplied me with a dozen glasses of ale. My writhing nerves were stilled at last. A morning paper told me the market had gone to hell. Well, so had I. The market would recover, but I wouldn't. That was a hard thought. Should I kill myself? No, not now. Then the mental fog settled down. Gin would fix that. So two bottles and oblivion. The mind and body. So he's talking about the mental and the physical here. Bill's already starting to talk about the mind and the body. He's going to talk about the spirit in a minute. Our marvelous mechanisms for mine endured this agony 2 more years. And like I was talking about, I had hit a bottom. I hit several bottoms and I dragged that bottom. Each of us are different in our stories, and each of us drag that long, as long or as short as need be. And some of our tolerances are stronger and some of us are less. And some of the consequences that we face are different. Some people lose their jobs. Some people lose their houses. Some people lose their relationships. Some people don't lose anything. That doesn't matter. Alcohol is a respecter of no one. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I hit a bottom and could get sober and I did all these relapsing and someone else never relapsed and they got sober. I'm just as alcoholic as they are. You know, it doesn't matter. We all have different paths, but I do relate to just being in agony and drinking and waking up and finding ways and means to drink and to drug. And that was my hustle for the day. It's like I had to put something in my body to get up, to go hustle, to get the real stuff to put in my body. And I lived that way for years. You know, this is how I was. I was smoking meth while I'm on the phone to a treatment center asking for help. And they're telling me you have to be sober for 3 days. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I wouldn't be calling you if I could be sober for 3 days. Like, this is the stupidest thing I have ever heard of. And I had to lie to them. I said, I'm coming in hot, you know, I'm coming in loaded. They're gonna have to put me in the detox for 3 days or something. Hopefully they take me when I arrive and they see I'm obviously not sober, but I'm on the phone. I'm on the phone, you know, these are the things that's happening. I'm shooting up and I'm loading up my next shot just like in tears because that's all I know how to do. You know, I'm just doing more and I had nothing going on for me. I had lost everything. I lost everything over and over again. And I think the worst hell, the agony, besides the mind and body, the physical torture that was going on, or the external torture, was building my life up and watching it crash down. And I did this over and over again. And Bill loses everything. He's rich, he's famous, he's all this exhilarating stuff going on in his life, and he watches it all crash down and he can never get back again. He can never get there again. His wife's working, he's stealing from her, she's tired, she's pissed off. You know, I'm hurting people, I don't want to hurt them, I don't know what to do, I still don't even really know what's wrong with me. And this is my life, and it's going on for years. Like, I'm reading this story about this guy, and I'm like, this is my life. This is where I've been, like, my whole life, you know? And this guy didn't even have a solution. The problem with me was I already kind of had a solution, but I couldn't grasp it, you know? Says, again, I swayed dizzily before an open window or the medicine cabinet where there was poison, cursing myself for a weakling. There were flights from city to country and back. My wife and I sought escape. Then came the night when the physical, mental, there's the mind and body. Torture was so hellish, I feel though I'd burst through my window, sash and all. Somehow I managed to drag my mattress to a lower floor lest I suddenly leap. A doctor came with a heavy sedative. Yeah, next day I was drinking gin and sedative. This combination soon landed me on the rocks. I mix stuff all the time, you know? Mixing GHB with meth and vodka, pot and meth, you know, it was meth and everything. As long as there was meth, I was good. People feared for my sanity, so did I. I could eat little or nothing when I was drinking, and I was 40 pounds underweight. I relate. My brother-in-law is a physician, and through his kindness and that of my mother, I was placed in a nationally known hospital for the mental and physical rehabilitation of alcoholics. So here's some treatment. Under the so-called belladonna treatment, my brain cleared. Hydrotherapy, and I just learned that hydrotherapy is you walk down a hallway and they spray you with water and like it hurts. And exercise helped much. Best of all, I met a kind doctor who explained that though certainly selfish and foolish, I had been seriously ill bodily and mentally. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. So Bill saw a doctor who gives him a diagnosis, you know, tells him somewhat what's wrong with him, that he's seriously ill bodily and mentally. You know, there's a lot of mental defenses here. He had some hydrotherapy under the belladonna treatment. The doctor talks to him. He knows what's wrong with him. He knows consequences that are going on. He has this self-knowledge, yet he drinks again, you know. Self-knowledge, you know, is, it feels good, you know. It feels good. It feels like I'm learning something. Every time I went to treatment, I learned something, right? I learned about warning signs. I learned about what's wrong with me. I learned about how my mind thinks. I learned all this stuff that really, I start worshiping. I start thinking that it's going to fix me, or I don't need to know me anymore. You know, these people come into the rooms. Oh, I just need to find myself. Honey, aren't you tired of yourself? You know, like, you've been talking about you for this fucking long and now you're going to go find yourself? Give me a fucking break. Like, get over yourself. I need to start getting to a place where I'm understanding this relationship with God that I need. The thing that's going to save me. You know what I mean? I'm not going to save me. Me finding about me and going and worshiping my private parts or whatever you got to do to find yourself is not going to fucking save you. You know, I had all the self-knowledge. I had all this Gorski knowledge. I knew how my mind was going to think and how I was going to relapse and what I was going to do and what the consequences were. And you know what? I put a needle in my arm. You know, take that. That's my experience with self-knowledge. And the problem with self-knowledge is that we feed it to people. We tell newcomers that they can rely on their great mind. They think it through. Just relax, you know, just think it through and go to meetings and you'll be able to know. You'll know when your feelings tell you that you're going to pick up again because we already looked at that. You use and drink when you're sad. You use and drink when you're lonely. And now they're controlling their emotions. They're playing God. They know when they're going to drink and use again and they're fixing themselves. And we basically just told them a lie. We told him a lie. Self-reliance will not fix me. This book is taking me to a place that I have to smash all the middle of the road solutions. And anything involving self is a middle of the road solution. Self-reliance will not fix me. You know, it feels good. It feels good, but it is not the solution. You know, this is not a self-reliant program. This is a God-reliant program. All right. I'm here to find a power greater than myself, to get access to power, to fix me, to help me through this. To take away the obsession, to take away this craving that I can't do on my own. And if you've had the experience that I have and going through Bill's story and seeing everything that he's gone through, you really think that he could have done it himself? Do you really think I could have done it myself? I know I can't have done it myself. Something has to happen and come into play here to smash the ideas of me fixing me. And this big book is doing a great job. And going through this first step, I'm going to continue to see how this middle of the road solution, this self-reliance, is not going to work for me. It's not going to work. All right. If it did, it'd end at Joe's story. There would be nothing else to read. Just knowing my relapse, you always hear, as long as I remember the last time I drank or used, oh, give me a fucking break. How many times have I thought of that when I picked up again? I mean, in the past. if it never worked in the past, is it ever going to work in the future? I don't think so. And I'm still here powerless. Like, I really have to get in touch with, just because I'm sober does not mean I still have power. I'm still powerless over drugs and alcohol. You know, I am powerless over drugs and alcohol. We do get power through this process. Don't get me wrong. I don't know where I was at. Hold on. Oh, but it was not. Self-knowledge did not fix him. The frightful day came when I drank once more. The curve of my declining moral and bodily. Now he says the moral and bodily. So now he's talking about moral, my physical and morality here. Health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, ETs, or I would develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year. She would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum. They did not need to tell me, I knew, and almost welcomed the idea. It was a devastating blow to my pride. I, who had thought so well of myself and my abilities, that my capacity to surmount obstacles, was cornered at last. Now I was to plunge into the dark, joining the endless procession of sots who had habitual drunkards, who had gone on before. I thought of my poor wife. There had been much happiness after all. What would I not give to make amends? But that was over now. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. Trembling, I stepped from the hospital, a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit. Fear won't keep me sober. And this program is not a fear-based program. It is a God-based program. And fear will keep me sick. Then came the insidious insanity of that first drink. On Armistice Day, 1934, I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere or would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn. In reality, that was the beginning of my last debauch. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen. With a certain satisfaction, I reflected there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through that night and the next day. After all that, you're still thinking about it. My wife was at work. I wondered whether I dared hide a full bottle of gin near the head of our bed. I would need it before daylight. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I remembered his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course he would have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. That very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. And that's where we stop. So my experience with Bill's story is, I've never related on a level to anyone, even people I've heard in meetings, until I read Bill's story again for the 101st time. I could relate to him on a level. Then he was the first person I related to at that level, at a deep enough level to get sold on this work. And, you know, something has to change drastically in me for me to get this. You know, alcohol is definitely a great persuader, you know, and it's helped me along this far, but something's got to push me to this place of surrender. And this book does a great job of it when I align my story with it and I see powerlessness at its true form in my life. So that's enough about me. I'd like to hear about you guys and about your story as it relates to Bill. So I am done and I am gonna open it up. Thank you for letting me share. Is there anyone that wants to start it off? There's a few people I am going to call on if no one jumps in. I'd prefer you just to jump in and share about the assignment.
I can share. Hi. I'm Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vanessa.
I was thinking today about gradually things got worse. Because he says that like halfway through his story. And I'm like, now you're saying gradually things got worse? Like you just were like taken off on a motorcycle. You're living with your parents. You haven't worked in 5 years. You know what I mean? And like that's I relate to that sort of stuff. You know what I mean? Like I didn't drink. That's not my story. Like, and I can rewrite it to fit my story, but like it doesn't follow this. I, you know, didn't drink in that kind of way. My progression was different. And in part because of people before me, you know, like they raised the bottom, like they say, and some other literature that we have. And, you know, so I just felt miserable. You know, by the end, I was drinking every day because I only drank at work and I owned a bar. So I went to work every day. So, you know, that happened. Gradually, it got worse. So, you know, I related to that. And but for me, it's a lot of the hopelessness, the horror of like things, you know, all of that. And I love when he says stuff like, I woke up, you know, and that happens to him more than once, right? And I can relate to that also in sobriety, like I wake up all the time, you know? I wake up to more and more and more promises, you know? And sometimes I falter and that's okay because then I wake up from that, you know? And it's like, there's so much hope in it. And what I love about going back to Bill's story is one, new things always, I always, like you remembered something, Joe, as you were talking. And that happens for me too, where I'll be like, oh God, I totally forgot about that instance or whatever. And it's something awful, you know, that happens for me. But also because I've had, you know, I'm recovered. You know, this is not my first time going through. I can look at it having been through and like just see the hope and the promise too, you know? And so it's nice to kind of look, I know that's not what we're focused on today, so I won't really go into that, but I just wanted to mention that I like that bit of it in terms of returning to it. Like it's always good to return to this, you know? And just remembering like these feelings, you know, and where had been my high resolve, you know? And I was thinking about that word resolve, like firm determination, like decision on a course of action. And you know, now I make a different kind of decision, you know, today. It's today my decision is about, you know, is God everything or is God nothing, you know? And I really only have to make that once, by the way, you know, if I want. So yeah, it was really good to hear you because I kept thinking about how like we, like gradually things got worse. Like my story is that I made things to be okay. Like every day I changed the line where the line was in the sand, you know? And I'm so glad that I don't have to do that anymore. You know, it's just, yeah, I'm grateful to be here. Thank you so much, Joe, that was really great.
Thank you. Jerry, John, Don, or Fernando, one of you want to share? Pick one.
Hi guys, John, alcoholic. It brought back a lot of stuff. It's been a while since I've went through BBA. And I mean, just reading the answers with the guys today, it brought up a lot of stuff that I had forgotten and why I'm back in this, going through BBA one more time because I need to grow. I mean, I can't stay stagnant in my steps. And it just reminded me when you were talking, Joe, you know, how much this story really does fit my life. And I'm going to zone in on surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. But what we write in there, can self-knowledge fix me? And I was in and out of this program for about 20 years, you know, and then the suicide question and, you know, my friends and stuff. I mean, Don sitting here, him and his sponsor sent me 5150, but I still thought that self-knowledge would fix me. I'd come into the program, I'd get a little piece of it, I'd get some things back, my life would start getting back on track. And self-knowledge is not going to fix me. I need to grow. I need to get closer with God. I need to get closer with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous to really be able to stay sober. I mean, on last night's BBA meeting, you know, the guy with 9 years, I can't remember his name, Matt, you know, was thinking about drinking, you know, and he had to put pen to paper and, you know, make some amends to move forward. And I can't forget that. Self-knowledge that this book is going to save me when my ass is on fire is not going to be, it's not going to happen just from my experiences. So that's why, you know, I'm here with these guys and I want to, I'm in it to win it. Anyway, thanks guys. Appreciate you.
Thank you for sharing. Jessica, would you like to share? Jessica, I see you.
I was unmuting. I wasn't pretending that I didn't hear you. thank you so much for your share. And I appreciate the determination you still had when you called and they said 3 days and you're like, I'm coming in hot. I was like, oh, okay, bye. Gonna have to find something else. You know, I just love listening to you share so much. And I have about 5.5 years sober. And have been so far out of circle and triangle for about 3 years now. And I loved that you had said grace, because I was, you know, I've obviously been in my head a lot because there's not much talking to God and wondering, why am I sober? How am I sober? Am I an alcoholic? You know, like going through all of these ridiculous things when I've gone through the BBA work, I've done the steps. It's just once again proving self-knowledge does not work. And it's just been such a great experience to go through this again and to get pen to paper and see, you know, see the truth, and even more is revealed at this point in time. And you know, I won't lie and say that there is something inside me that almost wants to scoff. Like I don't believe three is going to happen. And I just, it's crazy to me. So it's just, this has been such a blessing and thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you so much. Fernando, would you like to share?
My name is Fernando. I'm an alcoholic. And yeah, you know what, going over the questions today, you know, with Don was getting myself back in that first step experience again, because I've gotten so far that, and self-knowledge that I think I know everything, that I don't need to be doing this all over again. And in my head is just like what you said right now about the fear will keep me sick. And that's where I've been. I've been in that fear that's keeping me sick. And I haven't been, you know, like Jessica said it before, I have been in that self-reliant program. And you know what? That's why I need a good ass kicking. That's why I'm here. Because I need to get recharged. I need to get rebooted again. You know, and it's so difficult. And I'm not giving myself the breaks that I need. You know, just to remember that, you know what? That I'm not in charge. That I have to set aside everything I think I know for a new experience. But I am glad I'm here tonight, you know, thank you.
Thank you. Mariana, are you awake? I know it's only 4 a.m. over there.
I love that. I loved your share tonight, Joe. Thank you very much. And I thought I had all this self-knowledge.
Honey, can you speak up a little, Mariana? We can't hear you.
I thought I had all this self-knowledge when I was younger about, because I was working in an alcohol rehabilitation unit and my drinking was progressing very rapidly. And Bill W. drank for, I think, 17 years or something from the story that you've just read. And very, very quickly, my life was in a mess. It didn't take long at all. And I was working with all these alcoholics and drug addicts and thought I understood about addiction, and I didn't know anything. I really didn't know, and I couldn't identify with it because I was looking at what their behaviors were like. and but not understanding the craving or the mental obsession or what was actually happening within me. And so for a very long time, I didn't think I was as bad as other people, but I was progressing rapidly until it all started to fall apart and I ended up doing the things that people were describing that they were doing. But I still didn't understand about the physical craving or the mental obsession. And the wonderful thing was that people used to come to our rehab from Alcoholics Anonymous, and we used to accept referrals from Alcoholics Anonymous into our detox center. And I would sit with these guys, listening to them and sharing with them. And I just loved hearing what they were talking about. And when my life really hit rock bottom, it was them that I turned to. It was these guys that I turned to and asked for help, because I could see, like Ebby, that they were sober. There was something about these people that was completely different to what we were doing in this rehab center. And so self-knowledge, all that knowledge that I had was helpful, but it didn't help explain what was wrong with me and what was going on within my body. It's not until I came to AA, it's not until going back through Bill's story that I start to realize, to do it like this, that I start to realize, oh my God, I am so like him, really, really like him in lots of ways. And there's lots of things about his story I don't identify with, but I identify with what he's talking about, with the feelings and the behaviors and the way he drank and the way he, oh, it's just so, so similar. And I love that realization of, yeah, I drank because I was lonely and I drank because I got out of prison and I was on my own. It's like being challenged with, well, did you drink before you were in prison? Oh. Did you drink when you weren't lonely? Oh. So it was a real, it's been a real challenge to have to be asked these things. And all these years later, Joe, without a drink, being asked these questions and that realization of like, oh my God, I drank all the time. It didn't matter if I was happy, sad. It doesn't matter. Because I had drink continually drinking or using pills or using food or whatever I used continually, and it was always alive within me. So I just love what I'm learning and being able to pass that on to other people as well. I just love it. It's fantastic. So thank you.
Thank you so much for your share. Rick, would you like to share?
Rick, alcoholic. Thanks, Joe. I really enjoyed your share tonight as well. And, you know, I did the work initially 5 years ago, and I've done a couple of workshops, both with you and Tyler. And then I kind of got into about year five. I got back into the bedevilments. A lot has changed. You know, I don't know that I was on self-knowledge, but I was getting further and further away from the program so far that I was getting scared. So, you know, coming back into BBA, because for me, that's where the messages of depth and weight that I could get. Wanting to get back into working with others, but also wanting to take another workshop. So for me, this has been really huge from the beginning to, you know, Bill's story. I took what you said last week and, you know, made notes all around where Rick was just like Bill. I mean, I looked at it three different times this week, but I really did think, feel, and drink just like Bill. And while drugs weren't my primary purpose, alcohol is my, you know, king. It's like Tyler said to me once, if I put everything on the table right now, what would you go for? For me, it's the alcohol. But when I drink and blackout, I don't know what I'm going to do. First time I woke up in the hospital and the doc said, hey, your screen came back, you know, yeah, this, and this. And I'm like, I don't remember that, you know, but that's how my blackouts go. I don't know where I'm going to end up. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, another weekend at Vista County Jail. I can't tell you, I spent a couple of weekends there. It's a pretty shitty place, you know? But when I drink, bad things happen. And I got to see that all over again. You know, early on in this, I thought, wow, I can't believe this is like yesterday for me. And why it's so important to go back through the work. I mean, I get, you know, not everybody needs to actually do a new book, but I'm asking these questions and I'm asking my sponsees. So the fresher this is when I'm working for others, hopefully the better experience they're going to have. But what I really liked is the experience I'm having for the second time since the first time I did this work, shortly after getting sober, May 16th, 2013. So coming up on 8 years, When I was talking to Juan earlier, I'm not going to let that much time go by. It needs to be fresh. I need to be able to see the reality and the experience of step one. And, I'm grateful to BBA, and I'm also grateful to Tyler. This is, and indeed, a second opportunity to work with one of the greats as well as you. And clearly, you did your homework because you are on fire as always. So thank you, Joe. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Tyler, would you like to share?
Hi, I'm Tyler. I'm an alcoholic and addict. And I love you, Joe. Oh, my God. I just love to hear you. And, you have that kind of energy that gets me excited about the work, like Mark Houston and Joe Hawk and these guys. You're passionate and excited, and and you're so crazy when you drink and use. You see, I have to relate to that. I love that about you. I love that about Bill. You know what I mean? I am Bill W. I mean, I can lay my story right there, and everything he did, I did similar things. I took off in wild hairs. I got three times getting clean off of heroin with methadone. The third time, I took a design job in Bangkok, Thailand. I thought, I'll go to Thailand and that'll save me. I didn't know it was the heroin capital of the world. No one even told me. I landed there with this big design job, and I thought, oh man, I'm going to die in Bangkok. Shit, I can't believe I'm here. I couldn't believe it. By the grace of God that I didn't even know, I did not. I did tons of drugs there, and I designed in India, and I was smuggling drugs between India and Thailand. I just can't go do a design job. I just had this thing that I just had to get into doing more. I just loved drug dealing and designing clothes, and those are my two careers. But one of the things I want to say is that when I talked last week about the doctor's opinion, and I was telling you guys, when you go take people through, and for me and you, when we look at it, don't look at your first step from the first 3 or 4 years of your drinking, because that's irrelevant right now. This is Bill's last 5 years. And if you think that looks appealing, you're kidding yourself, because what Bill went through, that doesn't look appealing to me at all. And that's what we need to look at, because that's the truth. To me, the beginning of my drinking and drugging was not the truth, because first of all, I lied a lot to myself about it, about how great it was. I could tell you now, in the beginning, it was great. But when I look at my life today, compared to how my drinking and drugging was in the beginning, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I didn't know. My insides were at rock bottom 3 years into drugging and drinking. The spiritual malady was kicking my ass. I didn't know what it was. All of the internal problems, but until my external life matched my internal life, I didn't really get the help that I needed. And I got the help that I needed, which I'll share about next week when I do the second half of Bill's. I'll share about my story, some of it to that. But I didn't get the help I needed until I absolutely hit rock bottom. And it was by the grace of God. It wasn't by anything else. But I look at this story and I try to look at it in my life today. And am I controlling my drinking or am I not drinking? Bill said he could control the situation. I say to myself in my life today, am I living my life as a sober, recovered alcoholic and addict trying to control my not drinking? Am I living like a non-alcoholic addict? Am I living like I can control it? Do I understand myself so well, self-knowledge so well, that I don't need prayer and meditation? Maybe I don't need to work with others because I understand myself so well. So I try to put this also to my life today, make it relevant, because I don't need to spend any more time understanding myself. I need to spend more time understanding God. That's my problem. I want to understand myself, self-obsessed, right? And we'll talk about the destruction of self-centeredness next week. But this, I've been through this many, 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 many times. And you know what? This going through this first step, the doctor's opinion, how great Joe shared it. I was just following word for word, and you just brought it home so powerfully, Joe. This cracks me open, and I believe gives me the gift of desperation every time I go through Bill's story to go for more. Do you know what I mean? Because that first step, I feel it. I mean, the gratitude in my heart for the life that I have today, that God picked me out of the gutter and gave me this incredible life. I was living on the streets doing prostitution. I mean, I'm so grateful. And I, 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 I hope you guys all get that gift in your heart that, you know, I don't know what God's going to do in my life this time as I go through the steps with you guys, but I'll tell you something. He's going to do stuff. He's going to do incredible stuff in all our lives, but I don't try to see it each time. I try to let God just let it show itself. Let God show me each day as I open up, wake up, and become more aware of the gifts of God as he's changing every area of my life. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. I'd like to open it up. Anyone like to share?
My name's Dean. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dean.
Hi, Dean.
I love you so much. Oh, my God. Your share was so awesome on Bill's story. Oh my God, you opened my heart so much. And I can't express my gratitude to you, Joe, for the way you explained it today. But when it comes to the homework, question really hit home for me was actually question 12. Did you think of suicide? I often thought of suicide and I often acted out attempts of suicide. I wanted to go be with my daughter. I lost her at 16 and I wanted to go be with her all the time. Anytime I put a drink in my body, I want to go and be with her. And Bill's story is something that's resonated with. And when Joe was talking about that pain, you know, that pain, when you go through the work, you're gonna be in pain. I was crying, you know, answering some of the questions. You know, one of my friends that used to drink with me, because I'm just a drinker, that's what I do. But he would call me and he would coax me out and say, D, come out. You know, I have alcohol for you. I have your vodka. And that's how he would get me out the house because I'm a loner. And he's dead now. He died of a heart attack. I often mix with people who did other things. And he's not here anymore. You know, so going through the work was painful. Just this little couple of questions is very painful. But I'm so grateful, you know, I'm grateful for higher power taking me through this. It's like scraping off a scab when you get burnt, the doctor rubs it and he cleans it. And that's what it felt like. So I thank you guys for being here and being part of my get well plan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dee.
Hi, I'm Marie.
Hi, Marie.
I'm an alcoholic. Joe, thank you so much. I could so relate to Bill's story, and I love the way that you broke it down. And in the homework, I was just like all the questions, every question, I was like, yes, I did that always, yes. And, you know, I drank like Bill did, you know, and I acted crazy, and I was a hanger-on at drug dealers. And, you know, I drank, but I couldn't drink very much. For some reason, I would throw up. So when I was introduced to cocaine, I was like a heat-seeking missile. You know, I would honestly go out, even though the night before had ended with complete despair, and I woke up feeling like I could not make the next day. Later on that day, after a glass of wine, you know, a friend would call and say, you want to go out for a couple drinks? That's what I went out to do, was a couple drinks. And then my friend would go home and I was like a heat seeking missile, you know, I got to get drugs so I can drink more. And, you know, before I got to AA, I had lost friends, all my friends. And well, except the people that drank like I did. And, you know, I had this complete obsession to always drink. And I would plan it in my day when I could drink. And I couldn't wait every day till I drank. And I worked in the restaurant business so I could drink at work. And you know, I mean, I remember at 12 years old, a friend of mine and I, we took all the pills in my mom's cabinet. And we had never done drugs before, but we just one day thought it'd be a good idea. And we woke up 3 days later, each at home, and we were like, wow, you know? And I took everything anyone gave me. I'd be at clubs and people would say, you want this? What is it? I wouldn't even ask what it was. You know, I just drank. I was lonely. I was depressed. I was suicidal. And the only thing that saved me was the birth of my son. And I wasn't able to not drink while I was pregnant. But shortly thereafter, I was able to give it up under total despair and watching my son react to my using drugs. And I could immediately see them in his body. And that was enough for me to go to AA for the first time. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Marie.
Hi, Donna, recovered alcoholic. Joe, thank you so much for taking us through the first half of Bill's story. You know, it's such an experience for me to have a whole new big book. And instead of asking people that I'm working with, turning these statements into questions for their consideration, I have an opportunity to do it for me. And right from the gate in Bill's story, I was always looking for the approval of other people so I can feel okay, because how I felt inside, I didn't feel like I was enough. And so from the very first paragraph, I can get down with Bill on that. And I didn't want to be reminded of the warnings about alcohol, because alcohol at that point was giving me life. And I don't care what you said about alcohol, I wasn't gonna listen. Because now all of a sudden I can show up. I don't have to be afraid. I can feel attractive, because I never felt attractive. And like Bill, I didn't have any follow through. I would start many things and I would get to a certain point and I put the brakes on, because I didn't have the courage or whatever I lacked. I was driven, and the blessing is to be led. Today, there's a difference of being driven and being led. What did I think was gonna be my solution? Like Bill, money. I was getting money. And what did I do? I had more money to spend on booze and alcohol, because I was an after hours queen. I love the after hours. Talking about chatting in millions. I got 86th from one bar 3 times, because I'm sitting up in there talking shit. And this went on and on and on. I would get success. And I like what you said last week, Joe, the physical craving destroyed any success I might've had. Because I really did want to get my life together. I did want to go to that job, but I couldn't stop drinking. I got to get paid on Friday, because there was a time I was living paycheck to paycheck, trust me. And I'm going out on a Thursday and I don't finish drinking and drugging until Saturday. What happened? To be so on this side of the insanity, I had a lot of gratitude doing this today. And Tyler, thank you for mentioning, like, am I controlling the situation now? I am so grateful I could say, hell no. What God has done for me, I didn't think I was ever gonna get out of that role, that hamster wheel of a life. There's so much. I mean, every question, every sentence I turned into a question, and I realized that was me. This story is so me. I can go on and on, but the gratitude of going through this and realizing that God saved me from this, because alcohol, my mind never let me see the truth about alcohol. It's like it protected alcohol. When I went into a TC, they asked me how much I drank. I told them I didn't drink a lot. I was okay to give up the drugs. Yeah, I'm a crackhead, but I wasn't gonna say I was an alcoholic. And I realized, wow, my mind didn't even want me to tell on it. So my mind protected the alcohol, but my mind couldn't protect my life. Because my life was getting progressively, gradually worse. And I was fitting myself into the smallness of my life. I always said I lived in the world of at least. Well, at least I got a mattress. I'm so grateful. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much.
Norm, alcoholic.
Norm.
Joe, I so appreciate your passion when you share, man, because I remember when I came into a BBA in 2018, I had heard you share, and it kind of, you know, that stuck with me. So your share had a lot of depth and weight from what I heard from your share. And so just want to say how much I appreciate it as I hear this again. And is that, you know, I never, you know, when I was coming through the, you know, AA and, you know, did the steps the first times and things, I never put myself in this story. But how so much I can put myself in this story is just simply amazing. Because I go in here and I go into this part where it says, well, we went to live with my wife's parents. I found a job, then lost it as a result of a brawl, the taxi driver. Mercifully, no one could guess that I was to have no real employment for 5 years or hardly draw a sober breath. I didn't have no job. I sure did think I did, though. And I was just loaded every day, one way or the other. I became unwelcome hangover at brokerage places. I became unwelcome wherever I went. It didn't matter where I go. To my home. I was unwelcome with my job. I was unwelcome with my friends. Didn't want to be around me. But yet, here I go, right? And then I was like, oh, so now I'm going to come up. And sometimes a small deal would net a few dollars. And I would pay my bills at the bars. Really, I'd pay off my dealer so I could just borrow some more dope. And then I could use, right? And here's the catch to this, and this is what you hit on, Joe, and I so appreciate what you said. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. I thought I had, I'd look at myself in the mirror, and you know what, man? Be like, Norm, you got it going on, bro. Go ahead, go and get some more, man. You got it. You're just going to come up. You know what I mean? And I was just like bamboozling myself, man, to the like major max. And I could never get a hold of that. I could never think that. And then I would have these periods of sobriety, which would renew my wife's hope, which literally did, right? To the point where, for me, I ended up on the street, downtown San Diego, with a little grocery bag, right? And so my life would go on like that, you know? And then I would have these promising times where like, oh, he's going to stop. But I would gradually get worse again. And you know what happened here? Gradually got worse. Dude, I gradually got worse and worse and worse and worse each time it went over. But yet I would still go right back up at top and say, I got this, man. It's no problem. You know, and I just could never get a hold of that. And so I totally get that. You know what I mean? And then shortly after it, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I hadn't even taken. Was I crazy? It's like, it didn't matter, man. I was just like, I was insane, right? And then I learned about, you know, physical craving, because physical craving, when I first came in, I was doing this work the first time. I thought, you know, I believe in God. I love the Lord. He gives me a choice, right? That's how it works. Well, guess what? My stuff is my physical craving. It robs me of my choice. Tooks it. I had to battle that for a minute. I'm like, whoa, dude, it really does, huh? It robs me of my choice. And what happens to me is I break out in handcuffs and then I'm going to be in prison. That's what's going to happen to me. And it don't matter. I mean, one bad decision from madness. Because if I do that, it's going to be madness. It's going to take a little bit of time. And I will have lost everything that I've ever gained. But mostly I would be losing my dignity and who I was. And so, you know, I really stuck on that. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. So can't do it, man. Self will run riot. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. We have time for one, maybe two, one more.
Tina, alcoholic.
Hi, Tina.
Hi, Tina.
You know, it's a couple things. You know, when you're talking about ominous warnings and you were talking about the program, and it brought back memories in high school where I was in SAD, Students Against Drunk Driving. I just kind of thought of that at that time too. But, you know, one of the things before the meeting, I got some news from someone, a good friend of ours died because of, he had killed himself. And the way he did it really kind of, it got to me. And, you know, we were talking about hopeless state and reading what, you know, and Bill's story, and I was there, you know, even in sobriety, I was there, you know, and it wasn't even that long ago. You know, it was just before COVID hit that I was feeling that way. And so to hear how he did it and just thinking, you know, how he was feeling. And, you know, he wasn't at it. He wasn't in the program. He was a normie. I'm just trying to grasp, you know. I could understand and I get the hopelessness that he must have been feeling at that time. You know, and I get how this program is something that I need to it's a God-driven program, and I need to learn more about him and understand him more, because I already know I screw everything up. And to continue renewing my hope, because that's one thing I do fear is going back out there drinking and using. I don't have another chance. And I don't ever want to feel that kind of hopelessness that he must have felt at that time. And I just kind of, I needed to get that off my chest and to talk, because it's just sitting there. So thank you for letting me share. And thank you guys for being here. I really enjoy, you know, listening to you guys and everything you have to say.
Thank you, Tina. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Tina. Is that it? Tyler?
Yes, that's it.
Tyler, you want to